Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. If you've been following the wacky world of Missouri campaign finance, there's often a struggle between two opposing viewpoints, whether or not to limit donations directly to candidates or whether to have unlimited donations to political candidates. But a number of groups are putting forth a new option that involves publicly financing races for St. Louis County Executive, Assessor, Prosecutor, and the County Council. It's modeled after Seattle, where residents get a certain amount of money they can provide to candidates. And the goal of these so-called democracy dollars are to reduce the influence of large donors to county officials. Joining us now to explore this idea further are two people who are involved in the Honest Elections Report, University of Missouri St. Louis professor Anita Mannion and Benjamin Singer of Show Me Integrity, a group that advocates for ethics overhauls in government. Welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jason.
Before we get into the mechanics of the democracy dollars idea, why did you feel St. Louis County in particular needed this campaign finance overhaul?
Well, colleagues and I studied what campaign finance looked like for St. Louis City mayoral races and St. Louis County executive races from 2011 to 2021. And we found that not only is there a lot of money in those elections, but it disproportionately comes from large dollar donors and from white men and flows to white men, white male candidates. And so our research showed that candidates who are women and people of color have a harder time raising that money. They can raise as much, and they often do, but it's a lot more small dollar donations, and they often have to go out of state to get those.
I asked because for the most part, county governmental elections often fly below the radar compared to other contests. And with the exceptions of like contested primaries for county executive in like 2014, 2018, 2020, 2022 as well, and county prosecutor in 2018, elections for county council typically aren't that expensive. So what do you think about that dynamic at play?
I think that's right. I think that the countywide races tend to have more. So over that 10-year span, there was over $18 million spent to elect county council members, which is a huge amount of money. And the majority of that came from large dollar individual donors, even more than from corporations and PACs.
Okay, so let's walk through this idea a little bit more. From reading the report, candidates for county offices can't just get into the Democracy Dollars program automatically. They would have to take a number of steps. So what are they, Benjamin?
That's right. And I want to emphasize that this process of exploring this was the result of a public input process. When we asked the people of St. Louis in surveys, what do you believe elected officials care most about? We offered three options: community interests and or my interests, interests of big donors, or receiving funding for their campaigns. 87% said interests of big donors and receiving funding for campaigns. Only 13% chose the community interests or my interests. So the solution that we looked at was one of the most powerful solutions. There are multiple that are working across the country to empower regular people and decrease the corrupting influence of big money in politics. But we looked at this honest elections model in Seattle. It was created by a citizen initiative, not by politicians. And it was responding to the dominance of big money that was trying to buy politicians and seats on the Seattle City Council, especially Amazon. Every resident gets four $25 vouchers. That's every eligible voter.
I was going to ask, like, it's somebody who's eligible to vote, not necessarily registered to vote, correct?
That's correct. So being a citizen, you know, being 18 or older. And it was funded, when they created it in Seattle, by the smallest tax in Seattle history. Because as much as we talk about, you know, the disgusting nature of big money in politics, it's actually relatively small compared to, you know, how much it costs to pick up the trash every day or things like that. And the results of our of how it worked in Seattle was people-powered candidates were able to beat the Amazon-backed candidates in almost every race, although, of course, every election and every cycle is different. Low-income donors were overrepresented among democracy dollar donors, which closed the racial wealth gap that accounts so much for what Anita and her colleagues found in the disparity of not just how much money is flowing into St. Louis County elections, but where that money is coming from, which is what makes who our officials are paying attention to really inequitable. And so they saw more candidates running who were more diverse. And in policy, they saw more affordable housing, more job training programs, more things to create inclusive growth for the region, which I know is what all St. Louisans want.
Now, one of the things that caught my attention is you could not take advantage of this program and also ask people to donate to political action committees. But like, let me float a scenario that I think could happen here. What would happen if, say, Sam Page decided to take part in this and his friend created a pact, raised unlimited amounts of money without his involvement? Would he then be like banned from taking part of the program?
Great question. And we have seen both in Seattle and in New York and other places that have similar programs that had this legacy of corruption. Of course, New York City had one of the most corrupt political machines in American municipal history.
Tammany Hall.
That's right. So what they've seen now under the new system is, yeah, big money interests do go to outside super PACs, the local versions of super PACs, and they do spend a bunch of money. What they saw in Seattle is those big money independent expenditures are losing races. People look at the people-backed candidates and they look at who's on the side of big money, and they're voting for the people-backed candidates because the system is structured so that it's giving the participating candidates enough money to compete.
Okay, so you mentioned before that each eligible voter would get four $25 certificates, correct? So, I mean, I did the math like a couple of days ago. I would imagine there's like 700,000 eligible voters in St. Louis County. Would this cost like $70 million to implement?
So not every voter even votes, although this was shown to increase voter turnout. But not every voter is going to turn in their vouchers. But what they've seen is a steady increase in people engaging and using the system. And therefore, candidates are actually reaching out to regular people and being accountable to regular people more, not having to spend 70% of their time locked in a room calling big donors, which is what politicians usually complain about having to do to get their election.
Okay, because I could see situations where there are people in St. Louis County or elsewhere who may be like professionally unable to donate money to candidates. Like, for example, I don't donate money to candidates because it is ethically wrong for me to do so. Like, what would happen? Would they get like $100 that they could spend at Schnucks or something since they're not spending any of the money? Or would this only go to people who want to take part in the program?
It goes to every eligible voter, and whether you want to financially support a candidate with your democracy dollars, Jason, is up to you. But in Seattle, which has a population a little smaller than St. Louis County, they had about 50,000 people in the most recent election we studied use democracy dollars, which is a huge increase over the number of people who were using it before, and is a much more diverse cross-section of residents.
Would there be any restrictions on what candidates could spend their money on? Because in Missouri, you can spend your campaign money on a lot of things as long as there's a nexus between your official duties. Like, you can spend campaign funds to pay for a meal while meeting with a lobbyist or constituent. And there's also, you could use campaign funds to hold an event at Busch Stadium or an arcade or a circus. You know, there's really not a lot of like restrictions on how money can be spent. Would you have to like self-restrict yourself in order to be part of this program?
Fantastic question. And this gets to one of your previous questions, too, about big outside PACs. What we found was overwhelming support from the people of St. Louis, 91% who rated on a 1-5 basis, who wanted to create an independent ethics commission to oversee the program, investigate ethics violations, ensure the program is being administered properly, and have it be independent and not subject to an existing politician in the system who might have an incentive to mess with it. So they might be able to regulate that type of thing. Of course, laws can also be passed to regulate expenditures. And it should be mentioned, we explored that issue of these quote-unquote independent PACs that every big politician and their mother has these days. Mm-hmm. And one loophole that can be closed is Missouri law allows and St. Louis County law allows these politicians to directly coordinate fundraising with those independent PACs. I can go to you, Jason, and say, donate $1 million to the Benjamin PAC. I won't have anything to do with how it spends its money, but my best friend is running it, so donate there. The St. Louis County can pass a law, and it can be included in the law creating this, that would stop that really improper level of coordination.
Anita, you probably have followed the Missouri Ethics Commission for a while. I mean, there aren't many people that do, but it's often had issues like with compliance in Missouri's cornucopia of ethics laws. What do you think would need to be done to make sure a St. Louis County version is actually effective at making sure people follow the rules?
Yeah, if it done right, a St. Louis County version could be more effective than the Missouri Ethics Commission is. You know, we've had lots of issues with not having a quorum to even pursue investigations on the Ethics Commission, and other issues where, you know, they come to a stalemate or have sort of toothless power in some circumstances. So I think strengthening that in St. Louis County could be helpful.
Now, let's talk about cost. I think I saw in the report it would be about $3 million, and there's a number of taxes that could be used. Could either of you talk about the cost and how it would be paid for?
Sure. Similar to other places, it would be the smallest revenue stream really ever created. What we find is at every level of government where we've explored the idea of this program, it costs about 0.005 of any level of government's budget, about 0.5%. So the way we look at it is, should out of every $2,000 our government spends, should we spend $1 making sure it's being spent in a way that is ethical and accountable to the people of St. Louis and Missouri, to ensure that $1,999 is being spent properly? And yeah, we can look at available revenues that exist now, like a tax on internet purchases from out of state, which is something that hasn't succeeded in passing before. We can also look at new sources of revenue, like a tax on cyber cabs, you know, autonomous taxis, which are probably going to become a huge industry soon, and right now isn't an organized interest group that could oppose such a change in St. Louis County.
Or just like confiscate everybody's crypto. That could probably pay for most of the county budget. But
we are not endorsing theft.
I am not either, although I think it's pretty obvious of my feelings about crypto. But like, St. Louis County has had structural budget problems for a while. And given that the county's general fund will likely run out of money without big cuts in the next couple of years, I could see people not really wanting any money toward this program when they're staring at cuts to like the transportation department and the health department. I would like both of you to address that point, because I could imagine it would be brought up if this is like put on the ballot.
It seems to me that the funding would be the biggest challenge in getting approval. I think overall the concept is very popular. And what we see is that in St. Louis County, over the time we looked at, there were fewer than 1,500 small dollar donations made in that 10-year time span. So that's a very tiny proportion of the population that's contributing. So I think overcoming that, the funding of it, is the biggest issue, but I think otherwise it would be very popular.
And in the last 30 seconds, is there any plans to get signatures for this and to try to get this on the ballot?
We hope so. Our North County-led coalition really thinks this is critical to racial and economic equity. And we've heard Republicans, including on county council, say, I would fund this because it's going to save 10 times its amount in the corrupt expenditures coming out of county government. So there's definitely an appetite, and we hope to move it forward.
Show Me Integrity's Benjamin Singer and UMSL professor Anita Mannion both worked on the Honest Elections report, which proposes instituting public financing for St. Louis County elections. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.